The UAE Enterprise AI Expert Guide, From AI Strategy to Chief AI Officer, written by Rashed Al-Falassi, founder of United Labs, Abu Dhabi. Introduction. This book began as something you could listen to over a cup of coffee, a short series of talks built to teach the real language of enterprise AI to the people who decide whether it actually works inside a company, the executives, the founders, the operators. It has since grown into the book you are holding, but the spirit is unchanged. It is not a technical manual. You will find no code here, no model benchmarks, no jargon for its own sake. What you will find instead is the one idea that runs beneath every chapter, the idea that separates the companies winning with AI from the ones merely spending on it. AI is not a technology project. It is a business transformation project. The book moves in four parts. The first resets how you think about AI before any tool is chosen. The second is about building the machine, not one clever tool, but a coordinated system of AI workers with someone to lead them. The third is the human work of transformation, the first months on the job, the resistance, the rules, and the discipline of measuring what matters. The fourth lifts its eyes to where all of this is heading and ends with a single framework you can carry for the rest of your career. Each chapter closes with a short takeaway, and many include a small exercise to try before you turn the page. Throughout, the examples are grounded in the UAE, drawn from my own businesses, the work we do at United Labs, and the kind of ambitious Abu Dhabi organizations now searching for exactly the skill set this book describes. The figures used along the way are illustrative. The aim is simple. By the last page, you should be able to walk into almost any organization and answer the only question that really matters. How do we use AI to make this business dramatically better? Part 1. The mindset. Before a single line of code, before a single tool is chosen, AI is won or lost in how leaders think about it. These three chapters reset that thinking. Chapter 1. It was never about the technology. How companies actually use AI. There is one lesson that matters more than any other in enterprise AI, and almost everyone learns it the hard way. It is this: AI is not a technology project. It is a business transformation project. The companies that understand this distinction win. The ones that don't spend a great deal of money and end up disappointed. Most people believe AI starts with ChatGPT. It doesn't. It starts with a business problem. Picture yourself as the founder of a growing company. You don't wake up in the morning thinking, "Today I'll implement GPT-5. You wake up thinking that your support team is drowning in messages, that your managers are losing half their day to reports, that your sales team keeps letting good leads go cold. Those are the things that keep a founder up at night. They are business problems, and AI is simply one of the better tools we now have for solving them. Keep that order in your mind and you will already be ahead of most executives experimenting with AI today. The problem comes first. The technology comes last. The four questions behind every AI strategy. Whenever I am asked to help a company think about AI, I start with four questions, and I ask them in order. The first is simply why. What problem are we actually solving? If there is no problem, there should be no AI project, no matter how impressive the demo looked. The second question is where. Which part of the business holds the biggest opportunity? Customer service, finance, HR, operations, or sales? The third is how. Do we buy software off the shelf, build something ourselves, or take a hybrid path? And the fourth, the one most people skip, is how we govern it. Who owns the AI? Who checks its answers? What data is it allowed to touch, and what must stay off limits? Skip that last question and AI quietly becomes a risk rather than an asset. The mistake almost everyone makes. The most common mistake is to start with the technology. We need ChatGPT. We need agents. We need automation. It feels like progress, but it is backwards. The strongest companies start somewhere far less glamorous. Return on investment. Consider a support team that costs around 50,000 dirhams a month to run. Suppose an AI support agent can take 40% of the load off that team. Suddenly the conversation isn't about artificial intelligence at all. It is about saving 20,000 dirhams a month. That is a sentence a CEO can act on. Executives don't buy technology. They buy outcomes, and outcomes are measured in money, time, and risk. Five levels of maturity. It helps to think of AI adoption the way we think about learning to drive, as a series of levels you move through, not a switch you flip. There are five of them. Level 1 is individual productivity. Employees use ChatGPT to write emails, summarize documents, and tidy up their day. Most companies are here. Level 2 is assistance. Tools like Microsoft Copilot, internal chatbots, and knowledge assistants that sit beside people as they work. Level 3 is workflows. AI begins to complete whole processes, invoices, reports, document analysis, rather than answering one-off questions. Level 4 is agents. AI no longer assists, it performs work. Support agents, sales agents, HR agents that act on their own. Level 5 is the AI organization, where every department and every major process has AI woven through it. This is where the future is heading. The point of the ladder is not to rush to the top. It is to know which rung you are standing on, and to take the next step deliberately. How a real transformation begins. Imagine a large organization brings you in to lead its AI effort, a leading enterprise AI company, a government entity. Your first job is not to build anything. Your first job is to understand the business. You sit with executives and you ask the unglamorous questions. What wastes the most time around here? What costs the most money? What frustrates your people? And what frustrates your customers? Out of those conversations comes a list, perhaps 50 opportunities long. You rank them by value, by risk, and by how hard they are to build. The best of them become your priorities. Then you start with a single pilot, one, not 20. If it works, you scale it. If it doesn't, you learn from it and move on. Then you do it again. That patient loop, repeated, is what transformation actually looks like from the inside. The leader is a translator. Here is where a lot of talented people go wrong. They assume the AI leader is the most technical person in the room. They're not. The AI leader is a translator, fluent in two languages that rarely understand each other. When the CEO says, "I want faster customer service," the leader hears a business goal and translates it into something engineers can build, an agent connected to the CRM, the order tracking system, and the knowledge base. The engineers build it. The business feels the benefit. The leader is the bridge between those two worlds, and that bridge is worth more than any single model. This is the opportunity hiding in plain sight for someone with a background in operations, in running real companies, in managing people and money. You don't need to become the best AI engineer in Abu Dhabi. You need to become the person who can walk into a company, look at how it runs, and see 10 ways to save money, 5 ways to grow revenue, and 3 ways to make customers happier, and then turn that into a roadmap. That is the skill the region's most ambitious organizations are quietly searching for. Not another prompt engineer. Not another chatbot. Someone who understands business, people, operations, and AI all at once. The takeaway: AI is not about models. It is about business outcomes. The companies that win are not the ones with the cleverest technology, but the ones that connect AI to revenue, cost, productivity, and customer experience. Master that, and you stay valuable no matter which model is fashionable next year. Chapter 2. The Treasure Map. Finding AI opportunities. If the first chapter was about how to think, this one is about the single most valuable thing you can actually do: find the opportunities. This is the skill organizations pay the most for, and it has almost nothing to do with coding or models. It has everything to do with knowing where to look. Picture being handed a metal detector and dropped onto a long, empty beach. You don't dig at random and exhaust yourself. You sweep slowly, you listen for the signal, and you dig only where it grows strong. Every company is a beach like that, with money buried just under the surface. Wasted hours, repeated work, slow approvals, lost sales. Your job is to sweep the business and follow the strongest signals. 3 signals to listen for. Wherever you go, you are really listening for 3 things, and once you learn to hear them, you will hear them everywhere. Repetition. Anything a person does the same way, over and over, day after day. Copying numbers between systems, answering the same 5 questions, filling out the same forms, waiting. Anywhere work sits idle. Waiting for an approval, waiting for a report, waiting for someone to get back with an answer. Leaking. Anywhere money or customers quietly slip away. The lead nobody followed up on, the customer who left because the reply came too late. Repetition, waiting, leaking. Find those 3, and you have found where AI can create value. Walk the floor. The mistake is to walk into a department and ask, "Where could we use AI?" Nobody can answer that. Instead, ask a far simpler question. Show me your day. Do this in almost any business on an ordinary morning, and the answers arrive on their own. I start by pulling yesterday's sales into a spreadsheet. That is repetition. Then I wait for another team to confirm stock. That is waiting. Customer questions pile up after hours, and we only get to them the next day. That is leaking. In 10 minutes, Without once saying the word AI, you have found three real opportunities. Draw the map. After you have walked the floor, you build something deceptively simple. A list. Not a polished deck. A plain table. For each opportunity, write down four things. The problem, the department it lives in, what it costs today, and what you might save. Take those after-hours customer messages. The problem is slow responses overnight. The department is sales and customer service. The cost might be, for the sake of illustration, around 15,000 dirhams a month in lost orders, a figure you would estimate from your own data, not guess. The potential saving is recovering most of that with an agent that never sleeps. Do this for every opportunity you uncover, and what you hold in your hands is an opportunity map, the most useful document in the entire effort. Rank before you build. Beginners try to do everything at once, and everything at once is how projects die. So rank each opportunity on two simple scales, how much value it creates and how much effort it takes. Those two scales give you four boxes, high value, low effort. Do these first. These are your quick wins, high value, high effort. Plan them for later. These are your transformation projects, low value, low effort, worth doing only when you have time to spare. Low value, high effort, leave them alone. The whole art of AI strategy lies in choosing the right box at the right time. Always bring a number. Executives are rarely moved by the word AI. They are moved by numbers, so do the arithmetic before you walk into the room. A manager who spends 2 hours a day building a report is spending 10 hours a week, around 40 hours a month. If that time is worth 150 dirhams an hour, you are looking at 6,000 dirhams a month for one person. Multiply across 10 managers and you have found close to 750,000 dirhams a year, hidden inside reports nobody ever questioned. That is the number you bring to the CEO. Not AI. A number. The same instinct scales to the largest organizations in the country. Inside an entity with 20 departments and hundreds of processes, you do not need to be a deep technical expert to begin. You need to walk each department and ask the same three questions: what is repetitive, what is slow, where do we lose money? A few weeks of that produces a ranked map of 50 opportunities, and that map alone is worth more than most of the technical work that will follow. Fall for the boring win first. One last warning. Do not fall in love with the most exciting opportunity. The exciting one is almost always the hardest, and if it fails early, it can poison the whole effort. Fall in love with the boring quick win instead. A tool that summarizes meeting notes is dull, but it works within a week. Everyone sees it, and it earns you something you cannot buy: trust. And trust is what unlocks the big projects later. Before you turn the page, try this with a business you know well. Walk through one ordinary day in your mind and find one moment of repetition, one of waiting, and one of leaking. Put a number beside each. You have just drawn your first treasure map. The takeaway: you don't find AI opportunities by studying AI. You find them by studying the business. Listen for repetition, waiting, and leaking. Attach a number to each, rank by value and effort, and start with the easy win. Chapter 3. Sell the destination, not the Ferrari. Getting the CEO to yes. Imagine walking into the CEO's office after 3 weeks of careful research, a beautiful presentation under your arm. You take a breath and say, "We need an AI-powered multi-agent architecture leveraging large language models, vector databases, retrieval systems, orchestration frameworks, and autonomous workflows." The CEO looks at you, smiles politely, and says, "Sounds expensive." The meeting is over. Welcome to Enterprise AI. There is one sentence worth tattooing on the inside of your eyelids before any budget conversation. CEOs don't buy AI. CDOs buy results. Everything in this chapter flows from those six words. The Ferrari problem. Suppose I burst into your office and announce that I have found an incredible Ferrari. You say, "Fine. It's red, I tell you. Fine. 800 horsepower. Fine. 2 million dirhams. Now you stop me. Why do I need it?" Exactly. I described the machine in loving detail and never once explained where it would take you. Most AI pitches fail for precisely this reason. They sell the Ferrari instead of the destination. Translate everything into business. The fix is to translate, relentlessly, every piece of technical language into the language of outcomes. An AI agent becomes cut support workload by half. A knowledge management system becomes staff find answers in seconds instead of hours. An AI sales assistant becomes lift conversion by 15%. The technology is the same. The sentence the executive hears is completely different, and only one version gets funded. Think of it as a kind of Shark Tank test. If your pitch is full of GPT, Claude, vector databases, and agents, you have already lost the room. Nobody on the panel cares. But say, this will save us $1 million a year, and everyone sits up. Now you have their attention, and attention is the thing you came for. Three buckets of money. Almost every worthwhile AI project drops into one of three buckets. It makes money, it saves money, or it reduces risk. That's the entire list. If a proposed project doesn't fit cleanly into one of those buckets, that is usually a sign the business case isn't there yet. Watch how it works for one of my own businesses. The weak pitch. We'll build an AI customer service agent integrated with our online store and messaging channels. Technically accurate and utterly forgettable. The strong pitch. Customers get instant answers around the clock. Our staff stop repeating themselves, and we cut the support workload by 60%. Same project. One of them a CEO can feel. The question every CEO is really asking. Beneath the polite nodding, every CEO is asking one quiet question they rarely say out loud. When do I get my money back? That question has a name, return on investment, and answering it well is most of the battle. It is the same arithmetic as a juice stand. Buy a machine for 10,000 dirhams, earn an extra 2,000 a month, and you have recovered your money in 5 months. Now apply the same thinking to AI. A project that costs 100,000 dirhams and saves 500,000 a year is not a technology decision at all. It is an easy yes. Build the roadmap like a gym program. Most people build their roadmap backwards, leading with the hardest, most ambitious project. It is the equivalent of walking into a gym on day one and trying to deadlift 250 kilos. You don't get strong, you get injured. You start light, earn a few wins, build confidence, and grow from there. In practice, that means three steps. First, quick wins, easy, cheap, visible projects like meeting summaries, an internal chatbot, or a support FAQ bot, whose job is to create excitement. Second, business impact, larger efforts like a sales assistant or reporting automation, whose job is to show measurable return. Third, transformation, the big projects, enterprise agents and organization-wide platforms, whose job is to change how the company works. You earn your way up the ladder, you do not jump it. The order of the pitch. When you finally stand up to present, never open with technology. Move in this order. Problem. Impact. Solution. Return. Timeline. Problem. The support team is overloaded. Impact. Slow replies and falling satisfaction. Solution. An AI support agent. Return. 400,000 dirhams saved a year. Timeline. 8 weeks. Said in that sequence. The proposal almost approves itself. And if you ever find yourself across the table from a leading enterprise AI organization, asked how you approach AI transformation, you have your answer ready. I start with business outcomes, find the high-value opportunities, prioritize by return, deliver quick wins, and then scale into enterprise-wide change. One sentence, and you sound like a strategy leader rather than a vendor. The takeaway, the formula, is problem right arrow outcome right arrow ROI right arrow AI. Never AI right arrow technology right arrow features right arrow confusion. The best AI leaders don't open by asking which model to use. They open by asking which business problem is worth solving. Part 2. The machine. Once you know where AI belongs and how to fund it, you have to build it, not as a single clever tool, but as a coordinated system of workers, with someone to lead them. Chapter 4. Hiring your first AI employee, the AI agent factory. So far we have learned to find opportunities and to win the budget to pursue them. Now we build something real. We hire employees. Only these employees never sleep, never call in sick, and work for a fraction of the cost. We build AI agents. Most people still think of AI as a tool. You open ChatGPT, ask a question, get an answer, and close it again. That is a tool, and you are the one driving it. An agent is something else entirely. An agent is a worker. It has a defined job, access to your systems, and the ability to carry out tasks without you holding its hand at every step. A tool waits for you to act. A worker acts for you. Run it like a restaurant. When you open a restaurant, you don't hire one heroic person to greet guests, cook the food, run the till, and clear the tables. You hire a host, a chef, a waiter, a cashier, each with a clear role and a station they own. An agent factory works the same way. You do not build one enormous AI that tries to do everything. You build many small, focused workers, each excellent at one job. Meet the staff. Let's hire a few and see what they do. The customer support agent answers questions around the clock, wired into your FAQ, your order system, and your messaging channels. The sales agent replies to new leads the moment they arrive, follows up without being reminded, and books the meeting. The accountant reads invoices, matches them to payments, and flags anything that looks wrong. The HR officer answers staff questions about leave and policy, and helps screen incoming CVs. The operations manager pulls the daily numbers, builds the report, and has it waiting before you wake up. Each one is small. Each one is focused. Together they begin to look like a workforce. Write the job description. Here is the quiet secret to building an agent that actually works. Write it a job description, exactly as you would for a person. What is your role? What tasks do you handle? Which systems may you use? And when should you stop and ask a human for help? If you cannot write that description clearly, the agent will fail, for the same reason a confused new hire fails, only faster. Picture the sales agent of one of my businesses at 11 at night. A customer messages, "Do you deliver to my area? I'd like to place an order." The human team is long asleep. The agent reads the message, checks the delivery zones, confirms the stock, quotes the price, sends a payment link, and logs the order. By morning the sale is done. That is not a chatbot promising that someone will reply soon. That is an employee closing a sale at midnight. The problem you are about to create. Now imagine hiring 10 capable people and giving them no manager and no shared plan. The result is chaos, and the same is true of agents. Build 10 of them with no coordination and you get 10 silos. The support agent has no idea what the sales agent promised. The accountant has no idea what operations reported. This is precisely the trap most companies fall into. They build agents department by department and end up with a workforce that has no organization. It is the exact problem the next chapter exists to solve. Earn trust slowly. Never switch an agent on at full power on its first day. Treat it like any new hire. In week 1 it does the work while a human checks everything. In week 2 it does the work while a human checks a sample. By week 3 it handles the simple cases alone and escalates the hard ones. You build trust with an agent the same way you build it with a person, gradually, and with proof. Before moving on, try writing a single paragraph of job description for one repetitive job in your own business. Role, tasks, systems, and when to ask a human. If you can write it clearly, you can build it. The takeaway: stop thinking of AI as one big tool and start thinking of it as many small employees. Give each a clear job description and earn its trust slowly. But remember, a workforce with no coordination is just chaos with extra steps. Chapter 5. The Conductor, the AI operating system. In the last chapter, we hired a staff of AI employees. In this one, we solve the problem we created by hiring them. How do you get all of them to work together as one? Imagine 50 brilliant musicians, each a master of their instrument, and let them all play at once with no conductor and no score. The result is not music. It is noise, 50 gifted people producing chaos. Now place a conductor in front of them, and a shared score on every stand. Nothing about the musicians has changed, yet now you have a symphony. The only thing that changed was coordination. That is the entire difference between a company with a pile of disconnected agents and a company with an AI operating system. What an operating system really is. An AI operating system is not a product you buy off a shelf. It is the layer that connects everything, your agents to one another, your agents to your data, and your agents to your rules. Think of it as the nervous system of the company. The agents are the hands that do the work. The operating system is the spine that lets them move together rather than at cross purposes. Four layers. Every operating system worth the name has four layers, and removing any one of them brings the whole thing down. Data, a single, trusted source of truth for customer, product, and financial information, clean and reachable. If the data is messy, every agent that drinks from it is messy too. Agents, the focused workers from the previous chapter, each with its clear job. Orchestration, the conductor itself, deciding which agent acts, in what order, and what happens when one finishes. Governance, the rules of the house, what data agents may touch, what they may not, and when a human must sign off. Data, agents, orchestration, governance. Master the four together and you have something far greater than the sum of its parts. The magic is in the handover. The real beauty of an operating system shows up in the handover between agents. A customer writes in, "I'd like to return my order and reorder a different size." The support agent understands the request and passes the return to the operations agent. Operations updates the stock and hands the refund to the accountant. The accountant processes the refund and tells the sales agent to confirm the new order. One message in, four agents involved, one smooth flow out, and not a single human had to touch it, yet nothing fell through the cracks. That is coordination made visible. Run one of my businesses on a system like this, and the mornings change completely. Overnight sales flow into one place on their own. The operations agent reads them and reorders the stock running low. The marketing agent spots a slow day coming and schedules a promotion. The finance agent updates the cash position. You wake, open a single dashboard, and find that the business has quietly managed itself while you slept. Your morning is no longer spent gathering information. It is spent making decisions. Why most companies scale the wrong way. When companies decide to scale their AI, most reach for the obvious lever, more agents. So they build more and more, department by department, and discover that more agents without coordination simply means more chaos. The answer was never more workers. The answer is better coordination. A company with 5 well-coordinated agents will outperform a company with 50 disconnected ones, every time. Picture this at the scale of a leading enterprise AI organization or a government entity. Thousands of employees, dozens of departments. You cannot win there by handing everyone a chatbot. You win by building the operating system underneath. Clean data, focused agents, intelligent orchestration, and firm governance. That is the line between a company that merely uses AI and one that genuinely runs on it. To feel where you stand, trace one customer request in your own business that touches 3 departments, then imagine each step handled by an agent with a clean handover between them. The point where it would break today is exactly where you need the operating system. The takeaway: AI does not scale by adding more agents, it scales through coordination, data, agents, orchestration, and governance working as one. The winner is not the company with the most AI, but the one with the best coordinated AI. Chapter 6. The coach, not the player. The chief AI officer. Here is a job that barely existed a few years ago and may soon become one of the most important seats in every large company, the chief AI officer. And almost everyone pictures it wrong. Say the words chief AI officer and most people imagine a genius programmer in a darkened room, 6 monitors glowing, coding through the night. That image is not just slightly off, it is the opposite of the truth. Think instead of a football team, and ask who matters more, the star player or the coach. The player executes. The coach decides the strategy. A chief AI officer is not the finest engineer on the team. They are the coach. They don't build every system, they decide which systems matter, which projects get funded, which teams take them on, which risks are acceptable, and which outcomes the company is actually chasing. The problem this role exists to solve. Today a CDO's world is relatively simple. Finance, HR, operations, sales, marketing. Now run the clock forward a few years. The same company has 200 human employees and 300 AI ones, 50 automated workflows, 20 AI vendors, 10 platforms. Who decides the strategy across all of that? Who sets the standards? Who keeps it from collapsing into chaos? That person is the chief AI officer, and the role exists because someone has to. What the job actually involves. Strip away the LinkedIn mythology, and 5 responsibilities remain. The first is finding opportunities, the same floor walking, value hunting instinct from earlier chapters, now practiced across the whole enterprise. The second is prioritizing investment, when the company surfaces 100 good ideas and can fund only 10. Choosing the 10 is the job, and it is a business judgment far more than a technical one. The third is protecting the company. Picture an employee pasting confidential government documents into a public AI tool. The chief AI officer is the reason that doesn't happen. The author of the policies, the data rules, the security controls that turn AI from a liability into an asset. The fourth is owning the roadmap. Cities don't build roads at random, they follow a master plan, and without a 1, 3, and 5-year plan you get scattered projects and scattered results. The fifth, and often the hardest, is driving adoption. You can build a flawless system, but if no one uses it, you have failed, and so a great deal of the job is simply helping people embrace the change. The secret nobody mentions. Most AI projects fail because of people, not technology. Employees quietly wonder whether AI will replace them. Managers worry about losing control. Executives fear the whole thing flopping in public. A good chief AI officer spends as much energy managing those fears as managing any system, because that is where projects actually live or die. Why the business leader wins the role. Put four candidates side by side. The first is a brilliant engineer with no feel for business. The second is a sharp business executive with no grasp of AI. The third is a researcher with no leadership experience. The fourth is a business leader with a technology background and real operations experience, someone who understands AI well enough and can speak to executives and engineers alike. The fourth candidate gets hired almost every time, because the work is translation far more than it is coding. That translation never stops. The CEO says grow revenue and the leader hears sales agent. Operations says reporting takes too long and the leader hears automated reporting. Legal says compliance risk is rising and the leader hears monitoring agent. Spend a day shadowing one and you will notice how little of it is technical. Metrics in the morning, an operations meeting, vendor proposals, a budget conversation with the executive committee, a governance review, a check-in with engineering, approvals before the day ends. Almost no code. Mostly strategy, judgment, and communication. Why this region needs them. Look at the leading enterprise AI organizations, the government entities and sovereign funds across the region. Their challenge is not building AI. The talent to build is already there. Their challenge is deploying AI across thousands of people, dozens of departments, hundreds of processes, and that is a leadership challenge, not a technical one. If someone handed you a large organization tomorrow and asked you to find the opportunities, rank them, build the roadmap, estimate the return, lead the adoption, and explain all of it to the board, and you could see how you'd begin, then you are already thinking like a future chief AI officer. There is even a career ladder forming for exactly this person. The old path ran from engineer to senior engineer to CTO. The new one runs from operations manager to transformation manager to AI strategy lead to head of AI transformation to chief AI officer, and it tends to fit business-minded leaders far better than the engineering track ever did. If you were handed the title tomorrow, the first question to ask is not technical at all. If AI succeeds here, what will be different in 3 years? The answer becomes your strategy. Everything else is execution. The takeaway: AI scales through coordination, but it succeeds through leadership. The future belongs less to the people who build the best AI than to those who know where to apply it, why, how to scale it, and how to carry their people through the change. Part 3. The transformation. A strategy on paper changes nothing. These chapters are about the messy human work of turning AI from a slide into a result. The first months, the resistance, the rules, and the discipline of measuring what matters. Chapter 7. Listen before you build. The first 90 days. It is your first day as head of AI. The office is buzzing, everyone is excited, and the CEO claps you on the shoulder and says, "Go do AI." Which means, of course, almost nothing at all. This is the moment most new AI leaders make their defining mistake. They start building. The instinct is understandable and it is wrong. Your first 30 days are for listening, not building. Days 1 to 30, listen. Spend the first month meeting everyone who matters. The CEO, the CFO, the CU, the heads of HR, operations, and sales, and ask each of them the same deceptively simple question: what wastes the most time around here? Then write down every answer, however small. You are not solving anything yet. You are mapping the territory. Days 31 to 60. Find and rank. In the second month, you turn those conversations into a list of opportunities, and you rank them. Resist the urge to touch any technology. The deliverable for these 30 days is not a working tool, it is a clear, prioritized opportunity map that you could defend to the board. Day 61 to 90, one pilot. Only in the third month do you build, and you build exactly one pilot, not 10. A single, well-chosen win creates the momentum that makes everything afterward easier. Spread yourself across 10 projects, and you will likely finish none of them. Choose one, finish it, and let the success speak. The takeaway: the first 90 days are not about AI at all. They are about understanding the business well enough that the AI, when it finally comes, lands in exactly the right place. Chapter 8. People don't fear AI, they fear change. The transformation playbook. Ask most companies what transformation looks like and they will draw you a tiny arrow: current state, then AI, then glorious future state. Reality is rarely so polite. The honest diagram runs from the current state into confusion, then resistance, then mistakes, then, if you persist, learning, and only finally success. Every real transformation passes through that messy middle, and pretending otherwise is how leaders lose their nerve halfway. The crucial insight is that people do not actually resist AI. They resist change. The technology is rarely the obstacle. The fear around it is. Which means your real job is not deploying software. It is reducing fear. The formula that actually works. Change spreads through a chain you have seen before in this book, because it underlies almost everything. A small win earns trust. Trust makes room for a bigger win. The bigger win builds momentum, and momentum, sustained, becomes transformation. Each link depends on the one before it. Skip the small win and you never earn the trust. And without trust, the larger projects have nothing to stand on. A finance team that didn't want it. Imagine an accounts team told they are getting an invoice processing agent. The reaction is not excitement, it is silence, then quiet resistance. Reports start arriving late, rare edge cases suddenly seem to appear everywhere, and the pilot stalls, not because the technology fails, but because nobody in the room wants it to succeed. Now change one thing. Instead of announcing the agent, you ask the team's most skeptical member to help design it. Where should it hand back to a human, and what must it never touch? Within 2 weeks, she is the one defending it in meetings, because it is now partly hers. The technology did not change. The ownership did. That is the whole game. Four ways to reduce the fear. Name a champion inside the team, not above it. Adoption spreads sideways faster than it flows down. Show time returned, not jobs removed. You get 3 hours of your week back lands very differently from we are automating your task. Keep a human in the loop early and visibly. People trust what they can still override. Make the first win small and public, so the team sees proof before they are asked to believe. The takeaway: transformation is mostly psychology, not technology. Win the people and the tools follow, lose them and the best system in the world sits unused. Chapter 9. Seatbelts, AI governance. Nobody is ever promoted for governance. No leader has been carried out of a meeting on shoulders, because the data access policy was elegant. But people are quietly removed when governance fails, and in the age of AI, it fails fast and in public. Picture an employee dropping financial statements, government documents, or staff records into a public AI tool because it was convenient. The damage is done before anyone notices. Governance exists to make that moment impossible, and at heart it answers four plain questions. What data may AI access? What data must never leave? Who approves its decisions? And who is accountable when something goes wrong? Think of governance as seatbelts. Nobody buckles up for the joy of it, and nobody admires a seatbelt. But everyone is grateful for one at the exact moment it matters. The instinct to skip it grows stronger as a company grows larger and busier, which is precisely backwards, because the bigger the organization, the more lives, money, and reputation the belt is protecting. A near miss. A sales manager, racing a deadline, is about to paste a signed client contract into a public chatbot to just summarize the key terms. Nothing in the tool stops him. What stops him is a single rule the company adopted a month earlier and put in front of everyone. Client and financial documents never go into public tools. Use the approved internal one. One sentence, understood by all, prevents exactly the kind of leak that ends up in the news. A governance starter kit. You do not need a 100-page policy to begin. You need 3 things, and you can write them on a single page. A simple data classification. Public, internal, restricted. So everyone knows what may go where. An approval rule for anything irreversible. A human signs off before an agent sends money, deletes records, or messages customers at scale. An audit trail, so every AI decision can be traced back to who, what, and why. Start there and make sure every employee has actually read it. Sophistication can come later. Coverage cannot wait, because the first serious mistake usually arrives before the perfect policy does. The takeaway: the larger the company, the more governance matters. It wins no applause, and it saves you anyway. Begin with 1 page everyone has read, not a manual no one opens. Chapter 10. Fall in love with the problem. The AI product mindset. Put 2 AI teams side by side. The first builds genuinely impressive technology and is proud of it. The second is a little less dazzled by the technology, and a little more obsessed with the customer's problem. Over time, the second team wins, and it isn't close. The reason is simple and easy to forget in a room full of clever engineers. Customers never buy AI. they buy outcomes. The best AI product people are almost indifferent to the elegance of the model. What they care about, what they return to again and again, is pain, friction, and the specific problem in front of a real person. The technology is only ever a means. The moment a team falls in love with its own solution instead of the customer's problem, it begins, quietly, to build the wrong thing beautifully. Two teams, one brief. Two teams are handed the same brief. Build an AI assistant for the support desk. Team A spends 3 weeks comparing models and tuning prompts. Team B spends the first 3 days sitting beside the support agents, watching them work. Team B notices that 80% of tickets are the same four questions, and that agents waste their time hunting for order status across three different systems. So they build something narrow and unglamorous. It answers those four questions and surfaces order status in one click. Team A ships something clever that nobody quite needed. Team B's boring tool cuts ticket volume in half within a month. The difference was not talent. It was where they pointed their attention, how to find the real problem. Watch before you ask. People describe what they think they do. Observation shows what they actually do. Count the repetition. The problem worth solving is usually the one happening 100 times a day, not the dramatic one happening once. Measure the before. If you cannot state the problem as a number, you do not understand it well enough yet. The takeaway. Fall in love with the problem, not the solution. The solution will change with every model release. The problem is what pays you. Chapter 11. Peak Money. The AI ROI Machine. Every executive, whatever their title, is ultimately fluent in one language, money. You can speak to a CFO about elegance, novelty, and technical sophistication all day and watch their eyes glaze. Switch to money and you suddenly have their full attention. So when you propose AI, never say the model is better. Say the business is better, and then prove it. The difference is concrete. 95% accuracy is a fact about a model, and it lands with a dull thud. We cut processing time from 4 hours to 15 minutes is a fact about the business, and it lands with force. Executives care about three things: revenue, cost, and risk, and almost everything else is secondary to them, however central it feels to you. A worked example: walk through the arithmetic once and it becomes second nature. Suppose a 4-person team spends, for illustration, half of every week on a manual reporting task, roughly 80 hours a month between them. An agent takes the routine 80%, returning about 64 hours. Put a modest hourly value on that time, and you recover a meaningful sum every month. Against that monthly saving, weigh two costs: what it takes to build the agent once, and what it costs to run each month. If the project pays for itself in well under a year, you have a clear yes. If payback stretches past 2 years, you either sharpen the scope or walk away. The numbers are illustrative, the discipline is not. Notice what the calculation quietly forces you to do. Name the task, estimate the time, price the time, and compare it to cost. That is the entire ROI worksheet at the back of this book, and it is the difference between a proposal that gets funded and one that gets a polite "let's revisit next quarter." The takeaway: if you can't measure it, don't expect anyone to fund it. Name the task, price the time, compare it to cost. Then speak only in revenue, cost, or risk. Part 4. The future. Step back from the day-to-day and look at where all of this is heading, the kind of company that wins next, the changing partnership between people and machines, and the single framework that holds the whole book together. Chapter 12. Built for this era, the AI native company. Imagine founding a company today, with a clean sheet of paper. No legacy systems to nurse, no decade-old processes to honor, no bureaucracy inherited from a previous age. Would you build it the way companies were built in 1995? Almost certainly not, and that question is the whole point of this chapter. An AI-native company starts from a different set of assumptions. It takes for granted that AI is simply available, that automation is the normal way to do routine work, that data is digital by default, and that knowledge is searchable rather than locked in someone's head. Build on those assumptions and the shape of the company changes: smaller teams, faster execution, more output per person. The advantage is structural, not cosmetic, which is why incumbents find it so hard to copy. Two companies, same market. Picture two firms selling the same product. The first is 10 years old, runs on 12 software systems that don't talk to each other, and employs 60 people. The second launched last year, assumes AI in every process, and runs on a team of 12 that moves faster and answers customers instantly. The incumbent is not lazy, it is loaded with legacy. The newcomer's advantage is not a bigger budget, It is the absence of baggage that is the real threat of the AI native company. It competes at a different weight class, with lower costs and higher speed built into its bones. Acting AI native when you're not an established company cannot rebuild itself overnight, but it can borrow the mindset with three deliberate moves. Make data the default. If knowledge lives in people's heads and inboxes, no agent can reach it. Get it into systems first. Automate one full process end to end, rather than 10 tasks halfway, so the organization feels what native actually does. Give small teams AI leverage instead of adding headcount. Let the next hire be an agent until a human is genuinely required. The takeaway: the winners of the next era may not be the biggest companies. They will be the fastest, the ones built or rebuilt to assume AI rather than bolt it on. Chapter 13. Iron Man, not Terminator. Humans and AI. The question everyone asks is, will AI replace humans? It is the wrong question, and asking it the wrong way leads to a decade of bad decisions. The better question is sharper and far more useful: which work will AI replace? Because the honest answer is that it will replace tasks, not people, and knowing which tasks is the entire game. AI is genuinely strong at repetition, at analysis, at retrieving information from vast piles of it. Humans remain stronger at the things that have always been hard to automate: leadership, trust, negotiation, creativity, and judgment under uncertainty. So the future is not humans or AI, set against each other in a zero-sum fight. It is humans with AI, closer to Iron Man, a capable person amplified by a powerful suit, than to the Terminator we keep being sold by the movies. A day with an augmented salesperson. Consider a single salesperson with AI at her side. Before her first call, an agent has already researched the account, summarized the last 6 months of email, and drafted three tailored talking points. Between calls, it logs notes, updates the CRM, and queues the follow-ups. She spends her day on the part only she can do, building trust and closing, while the agent absorbs the administrative drag that used to eat half her week. She is not replaced. She is amplified, and she now does the work of three without working longer hours. What to delegate, what to keep. Give AI the repetitive, the high volume, and the information heavy: research, drafting, data entry, first pass analysis. Keep for humans the relational and the consequential: negotiation, judgment calls, creative leaps, and anything where being wrong is expensive. When unsure, let AI prepare and a human decide. The draft is cheap. The decision is what matters. The takeaway: the most valuable employee of the coming years is not the one who resists AI or the one replaced by it, but the one who is augmented by it. Chapter 14. The year 2035. The future enterprise. Travel forward a decade and step inside an ordinary company. It might employ 100 humans and 1,000 AI workers, and nobody finds that ratio remarkable anymore. What strikes you instead is how the texture of the day has changed. Meetings are shorter, because the information everyone used to gather by hand is simply there. Reports write themselves. Customer service is instant. Knowledge is searchable rather than hoarded. Decisions arrive faster because the work that used to precede them has been quietly automated away. Executives spend far less time collecting information and far more time doing the one thing only they can do: making good decisions. The companies that thrive in that world become learning organizations rather than reporting organizations, and the distinction turns out to matter enormously. A morning in 2035, an executive arrives at 7. Overnight, agents have closed the books, drafted the weekly report, answered 400 customer questions, and flagged the three issues that actually need a human. Her dashboard does not show her data to gather. It shows her decisions to make. The meeting that once took an hour to align everyone on the facts now takes 10 minutes, because the facts were never in dispute. By the time her team logs in, the routine day has already run itself. What is left for her is the judgment, and that is exactly as it should be. Three bets to place now: invest in clean, connected data. It is the one asset every future capability quietly depends on. Build the habit of measuring decisions, not activity, so you are ready when information becomes free. Develop people who can lead AI, not merely use it. That scarce skill is what 2035 will pay for. The takeaway: when information becomes nearly free, the scarce and valuable thing is the quality of your decisions. So start building the data, habits, and people that produce good ones. Chapter 15. The One Framework, the Grand Strategy. You have reached the end, and so it is time to compress everything in this book into a single framework simple enough to carry in your head for the rest of your career. It runs in 7 stages, and every chapter you have read is really an elaboration of one of them. Find the problems. Ask what is slow, what is expensive, what frustrates customers. Find in opportunities. Ask where AI can genuinely help. Prioritize. Choose high return, low risk, and fast wins. Pilot. Start small, win quickly, and build trust. Dale. Expand the projects that worked. Govern. Protect the data. Set the standards. Manage the risk. Transform. Move from a handful of isolated projects to an organization that runs on AI. Three rules to keep forever. If everything else fades, hold on to three rules. The first, AI is not a technology strategy, it is a business strategy. The second, AI does not create value on its own. Business outcomes create value, and AI is only the means. The third, the future belongs to the leaders who can connect three worlds that rarely speak to one another: business, people, and technology. Two executives. Picture two leaders. The first knows every model, every benchmark, every framework by heart. The second knows how to grow revenue, cut costs, sharpen operations, lead people, and use AI to do all of it. Run the clock forward 10 years and the second executive wins, every single time. Knowledge of models ages quickly. The ability to turn AI into business results does not. Your move. And so, finally, this becomes personal. Look honestly at your own path. The operations leadership, the real businesses built and run, the AI projects, the agents, the teams managed, the strategy. You are far closer to being an AI transformation leader than an AI engineer, and that is not a consolation prize. It is the rarer and more valuable position. Your opportunity was never to out-research the researchers. It is to become the person who can walk into any organization and answer the question that matters most. How do we use AI to make this business dramatically better? That is exactly the skill the largest enterprises, the sovereign-backed companies, and the AI-first organizations of this region are searching for right now. The learning is finished. The practicing begins. The takeaway: you now speak the language of enterprise AI, strategy, agents, operating systems, governance, transformation, and leadership. The next step is no longer learning. It is practicing on real organizations, because that is where expertise is actually built. Appendix. The toolkit. Four simple tools turn the ideas in this book into action: the opportunity map, the value and effort matrix, the ROI worksheet, and the 90-day plan. You will find them laid out at the back of the book.